Good evening, everyone. I'm Lenore Mudu. Welcome to Health Chat. The World Health Organization says an estimated 31% of all deaths worldwide are due to cardiovascular disease. That's 17.5 million people each year. That's a lot. And 75% of the deaths occur in low-income and middle-income countries. There are various types of cardiovascular disease, and also heart diseases comes in many shapes and forms. Here in the United States, the first National Heart Valve Disease Awareness Day, organized by the Alliance for Aging Research and other organizations, was commemorated on Wednesday, February 22nd, to raise awareness on the condition and ways to address it. Heart valve disease is a debilitating yet very little known disease. Observers say more needs to be done to raise awareness and tackle cardiovascular disease in general. And we will discuss heart disease on the program today. They also say that in Africa, more awareness is needed, and also the means and resources to address cardiovascular disease. And joining us via phone from Los Angeles, California, is Dr. Emily Farkas, a cardiothoracic surgeon at Thedocare Appleton Heart Institute in Wisconsin. Dr. Farkas also serves on the board of trustees for the humanitarian organization CardioStart International and VOOM Foundation. Dr. Farkas, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Great. We also have a couple more guests joining us via phone from Nairobi, Kenya. Is Elizabeth Gatumia, CEO of the Kenyan Heart National Foundation. Elizabeth, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Lenore. Glad to have to be with you this evening.
Great. And also from California, joining us via phone, is Dennis Dobkowski, along with his wife, Anne Dobkowski. They are American Heart Association Heart Valve Ambassadors. Welcome to the both of you.
Well, thank you for inviting us.
It's our pleasure to be here.
Great. And it's really great to have all of you joining us today, because heart disease is such a complex problem, and very little is known given the scope of the problem. And Dr. Farkas, please, let me start with you. If you give us a sense, I know that heart valve disease is something that you are like an expert on heart valve disease, and we will definitely talk about that because it is very little known. But if you can give us a sense of heart disease in general, in terms of how much of a problem it is here in the United States, for example.
Sure, Lenore, thank you. When people refer to heart disease in general, they're usually thinking about blockage of the arteries to the heart or the blood vessels to the heart, the things that cause a heart attack. And so it's an enormous problem in the United States and worldwide, and it's the number one leading cause of death in the United States is from heart disease.
Mm-hmm. And Elizabeth, you being in Africa, can you give us a sense of the problem of heart disease in your part of the world?
Yeah, I'm very interested to hear about the heart valve disease in America, because in Kenya and in Africa in general, it's a very serious disease. We have what we call the rheumatic heart disease, which is a heart valve and the heart muscle disease, which touches a very insignificant, almost sore throat, and ends up destroying the heart valves. And so that is what we mainly work with here in Kenya, with Kenyan Heart National Foundation. We have many, many children who are affected by rheumatic heart disease. Mm-hmm. And rheumatic heart disease is a disease of heart damaged heart valves from the bacteria called Streptococcus.
Okay, damaged heart valves. So definitely it takes us back to the issue of heart valve disease.
Yes.
And let me go to Dennis. Dennis, you, along with your wife, are ambassadors for the American Heart Association. And this, one of the reason, if not the main reason, is because you have gone through an experience with heart disease. Can you share that with us, what you've gone through?
Yes, I had about 2 years ago a heart valve, aortic heart valve replacement. over the years, going through physicals, I had a heart murmur, and then in the later stages, it was leaking. Still wasn't serious, but the leak got considerable, and at one point, and I was having heart palpitations and shortness of breath, and then being very lethargic. So they said it was time, and we set up an appointment and went in. So that's my experience.
Mm. And you are there with your husband, seeing him go through this. First of all, what was your first reaction when you heard of his condition, of what he was going through?
Well, initially, and this is a period of about 12 years, initially hearing about the murmur, I wasn't that concerned because we know medically how many people have heart murmurs. And so I was assuming that this was not going to be anything serious or life-altering, and it turned out that progressively, and this is something with valve disease, it is a progressive situation, especially as people age. It became a much larger issue with the larger degree of regurgitation and then the narrowing, the stenosis in the valvular area, and so it became a life-altering situation. And my situation is such that I'm a nurse, so I understood more of what was happening, which wasn't necessarily wonderful for Dennis because I kind of went into clinical mode. And all he could see was he was terrified with this upcoming surgery, being an open-heart surgery. So I knew everybody that was dealing with him, since I had worked at the hospital where his surgery was being performed, and I was there as his caretaker, but certainly too as the wife, it's still frightening no matter what.
Absolutely, absolutely. And Dr. Farkas, you hear Dennis's experience. You are a heart surgeon, so his condition. First of all, how common do you come across, having to do heart valve replacement, and how common is heart valve disease?
The heart valve replacement or repair is one of the most common operations that we perform in the United States, uh-huh. and it's very common. The reasons vary a little bit between the United States and perhaps developing countries. As Elizabeth pointed out, rheumatic heart disease is one of the major prevalent problems in areas like Kenya and elsewhere. In the United States, it's more commonly due to an abnormality at birth. So some of the leaflets, as we call them, of the valves are not normal. And over time, they progress to a period where they don't function regularly. The other cause is as we age, our valves are exposed to so much wear and tear, so to speak, and they become hardened and calcified so that they either don't close completely or that they leak and they can be narrowed and also not allowing enough blood to get through. So there are a number of different problems that can occur as we age.
This is a condition that one can have at birth?
Yes, it is. It is.
And then a condition also that can develop over the years. I'm trying to make sure I understand.
That's correct. There are congenital defects is what we call them. So there are patients who are born with parts of their valve that aren't normal. And so that either causes a problem right away or it causes a problem over time. And then a different condition can happen as we grow older and age that's referred to as degenerative valve disease.
Mm-hmm. Now, Elizabeth, you talked about rheumatic heart disease, which is common amongst many children in your part of the world. What type of infrastructures do you have to address this problem? Because if I understand correctly, rheumatic heart disease is caused by a virus, right?
It's caused by a bacteria.
A bacteria,
Staphylococcus
okay.
bacteria, yes. And unlike what Dr. Focus has just explained, this is an acquired heart disease.
Yes.
It's not one that children are born with. In fact, it begins around about maybe 3 to 5 years and up to 15. It's a children's disease that is acquired. And it starts off with just an infection of the throat by that bacteria called Streptococcus. And if that bacteria is not treated correctly and promptly, then the body starts reacting. In fact, somehow the body reacts to that bacteria, and the first culprit is the heart. And it affects, it starts denaturing or destroying the heart valves. So this is something that is totally preventable, 100% preventable, mm-hmm. if it can be addressed at the, what we call the strep sore throat. Streptococcus, I mean strep for short for streptococcus.
Yes.
So it is a totally different scenario here in Kenya and in Africa and in most developing countries.
Okay.
In fact, we refer to it as a poor man's disease, so to speak, because most people who can afford to go to the hospitals will go and will be given some antibiotics of sort and it will be taken care of. But because majority, again, of the people we deal with are poor, they will treat strep sore throat as something very minor. A child will be told, go gargle some warm, salty water, or go rest, or they'll buy a Panadol and give the child. And so it is from this that scenario begins. The heart starts being affected. The heart valves, mainly the mitral and the aortic valves, get infected and they become so destroyed that they malfunction. And they end up doing what the doctor was saying. There is regurgitation. The child has, you know, will have mamas like the patient on your side talks about, and it becomes so weak and all that. And yet it is something that can be stopped right at the strep sore throat. So Kenyan Heart is very passionate about sensitizing children mm-hmm. in schools and from all walks of life about having a strep sore throat treated promptly and correctly.
Okay. Now, it seems, Dr. Farkas, that different parts of the world have different, different common heart conditions. So as Elizabeth is telling us about rheumatic heart disease, and then coming back to the United States, the experience with Dennis, what would you say in terms of the problem of heart disease in the United States? Who is most at risk? Who is more at risk for example, when we look at heart valve disease, who is more at risk to develop this as opposed to one population versus the other or one gender versus the other?
Sure. Well, you know, the differences in heart valve disease between the genders is not as prevalent as it is in blockage of the arteries. But in general, we know that one common condition, which is called mitral valve prolapse, so that's a common diagnosis where the mitral valve, which is a valve on the left side of the heart, is leaking or it's not closing tightly. And many, many people will live their whole lives without any problem from the mitral valve prolapse and won't require any treatment. One difference between men and women is that men tend to have the need to require surgery to fix that problem of mitral valve prolapse more commonly. So that's one difference. In general, however, there aren't many differences in the sexes for the acquisition of heart valve disease.
You say men tend to need surgery to fix that problem. Is there a specific reason? Does it have to do with their biology or their lifestyle?
You know, we don't have a good answer for why that is, but lifestyle is certainly part of the problem and most likely contributes to the difference in the genders.
Okay. Now, Dennis, what did you understand after going through your experience in terms of why you had it and what are you doing different now after this surgery to prevent any other challenges with your heart?
Well, we really, you know, altered our diet. I am exercising daily now, and another disease that really affects the valve is diabetes, and I had I was pre-diabetic before the surgery. Mm-hmm. But after the surgery, my blood sugars were all over the charts. So it's been a real challenge to get that stabilized. So essentially, you know, exercise, diet, and just praying a lot.
Mm-hmm. That always helps, doesn't it? And how do you support this issue with your husband in terms of helping him maintain his good health? I know you have the nurse background, maybe it helps, but what else? What are some of the challenges to maintain this?
Well, one of the things, as Dennis just mentioned, that happened was he went into type 2 diabetes, insulin dependent, and really trying to stabilize that has been a challenge. And I think, like you said, the major things are going to be lifestyle changes of diet and exercise, and those are both huge issues for most of us. So that, as you know, as the wife, I'm sometimes the taskmaster, which is, you know, what happened in the beginning with his recovery is, you know, maintaining and stimulating and maintaining the momentum of what needs to be done to assure the best recovery possible.
Okay. Now, Dr. Farkas, how challenging is the specific surgery that Dennis underwent in terms of for the patient generally? How challenging is it?
Well, for most patients, it's obviously a life-changing event, and it's a serious undertaking. However, the technology and the advances that modern medicine offer make the operation very low risk for most patients. So a very common scenario would be someone undergoing an aortic valve replacement, like we're discussing with him, would be maybe a 1-2% risk of a major problem. So a problem like a stroke during the operation, a problem like kidney failure, a liver failure, or a problem, for instance, with not being able to get off the ventilator. So a serious problem is usually about a 1-2% risk. Mm-hmm. And the way of looking at that is there's a 98% chance of getting through an operation perfectly safely. Mm-hmm. A lot of it depends, of course, on the other problems, health problems that patients have. But heart surgery in general has advanced to the point where it's quite safe for patients.
That's good to know, because when we hear heart surgery, it's really frightening, to be honest. And it's good to know that, you know, things have evolved. But that's when patients have access to the right expert like you and to the right medical facility like in the United States. So this takes me to you, Elizabeth, in terms of access to the expertise and the resources. Tell us about what is your reality.
Yeah, it's a sad state of affairs for us back here, because already even to manage that strep sore throat, which would probably cost maximum maybe $2 at the highest in whichever health facility they would go, these families may not afford that just to treat the strep sore throat. So you can imagine when it progresses to rheumatic fever, which is the second stage, and then rheumatic heart disease. Mm-hmm. By the time now they are requiring, because they also require open heart surgery, like that patient that you have.
Yes, Dennis.
We are talking over $5,000 to $6,000 for surgery. It's just out of their reach totally. And so we really have challenges here, and children, families suffer so much when now it gets to rheumatic heart disease. And that is when they realize, actually, that the child is sick. So the biggest, our core business is to just sensitize families, children, parents, teachers, so that at that stage of when it is a strep sore throat, it can be treated. Though that amount of money may not necessarily be easy, it's better to deal with $2 than with $5,000 to $6,000.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a system at Kenyan Heart where we empower some various clinics in those poor areas where those children who suspect, or if the teacher suspects that a child has a strep sore throat, where they go and they are treated for free because we have made arrangements with the clinics so that no strep sore throat is ignored, because it goes on. And by the way, it becomes a serious disease, because even with an open heart surgery, and like now in America, what you're describing, the facilities are available, the expertise is available, their health, programs that support financially. We don't have that. Here what happens is, even if when we fundraise, and we do, Kenyan Heart does help a lot of children to fundraise to access that open heart surgery, which requires that the heart valves that are damaged are removed and replaced with artificial ones. And that in itself is, like the doctor will tell you, creates another problem altogether, because these children now have to be on medication for the rest of their lives. And that now, again, is a different challenge financially and otherwise. Some of them can't even manage to get the funds, the transport money to go to cardiologists when we make arrangements for them. We have to look for money for them to send them so that they can access the public transport to go and see a cardiologist for follow-up. So it becomes so very complicated here, and so totally out of ability to be managed by those ones who get it.
Yes.
And it's a real challenge here. And most of them never even lived to be 30 years of age. It's just 2 weeks ago that we lost one of our oldest patients, a patient we've been with for the last 14 years. We got him, he was a young boy, we got him when he was about 10, and now he's died in his 20s. And we've been managing his medication throughout, but this time he got sick and it was at night, and before he could be attended to the nearest health facility, they didn't have the know-how, and they didn't know what to do, and he just died on the road. That happens so often, which is so sad.
Yes, it's very, very sad. It's very sad and unfortunate, because from my understanding, from what you're describing, and Dr. Farkas talked about it, it's something that really can be addressed and taken care of. And it's unfortunate to see that some people will lose their lives because they don't have access. It's just a problem of access. It's really unfortunate.
Right.
Dr. Farkas, one of your initiatives and projects, program that you're working on, is to travel around the world to provide surgery, much-needed surgery to communities that are in need. So can you tell us a little bit about that project, please?
Sure. So there are certain nonprofit organizations that put together groups of specialists to travel to these areas like Kenya, where the access is very poor. So there are some countries that have no heart surgeons. There are some countries that have no heart surgeons within several border countries. And so these places really need volunteers, like the nonprofit organization groups that I mentioned, to come to the areas, not just to provide the heart surgery for free to the patients who can't afford it, but also to train the local individuals.
Yes.
To build a program that they can then serve their community for in the long term.
Mm-hmm. And training is very, very, very critical as well, because once the NGOs come in, they provide the service, and then they leave, the follow-up is critical. Just like Elizabeth talked about that boy, at some point he didn't have the proper follow-up. So how much impact have you seen since you've been involved? What countries have you visited?
Oh, personally, I've been to many countries, Nigeria, Ghana, Brazil, Vietnam, Peru, Mongolia, multiple countries. But the real impact is when these nonprofit organizations invest in a location, such as Nigeria is a good example, one we're headed to with the VOOM Foundation in the coming month. We focus on an area where there's a lack of access. And so Nigeria is a country of 50 million plus with with no heart surgery that goes on unless a group like this travels to the area and really invests in the education and knowledge and program building of the local clinicians so that they can have a self-sustaining program that will serve that community for years to come. And so that's really the answer. You're right. It's not going in and doing, you know, 10 operations and leaving. It's really investing and empowering the local clinicians so that they can provide that service to their patients.
Fantastic. Dennis, now that you have gone through this experience and you are you have become an ambassador along with your wife to talk about this problem, what is your message when you and Anne go out there to speak as ambassadors? What really would you like people to know?
Well, when I went into the surgery, there was not a lot of information, so I was looking desperately for anything that I could get a hold of. So, you know, the awareness, and that's why we became ambassadors. And the main thing you need to do is whenever you go and see a doctor, go to a clinic, make sure they listen to your heart. You can catch so much with a stethoscope that it's very important that that's done. The American Heart Association has a great support network that they can go online at heart.org/valve. And since our episode 2 years ago, we now have 35 pages of information, Q&A, and different things that people can come in and ask questions and get answers from ambassadors and also from other patients that follow the support network.
Okay. And speaking of messages, Dr. Farkas, what is your message for people that are, because it seems like people really do not grasp this problem of heart disease until they are hit with it. So in terms of prevention in general, what is the message?
Well, the message would be to pay attention to changes in the way you feel or your body. So to really make the, as far as prevention, to make the changes in your lifestyle, such as keeping your weight under control, keeping your blood pressure at a normal range. If you have diabetes, keeping it under good control, and making sure that you are very aware of anything that's changing, such as your ability to exercise or how fatigued you feel, or if you feel short-winded when doing simple tasks. Those are all things that you should bring to the attention of your physician, and it's very important to recognize those issues and to seek treatment and not to minimize them so that things can be done sooner rather than later.
Okay. And in a few seconds, what is your message to those that are caring for patients with heart disease?
Well, I think they need to be very supportive and kind of meet their loved one where they are at that time. What I thought medically wasn't where my husband had concerns. And I think it's very important for you as a caregiver to support your loved one, but also to support yourself, because you are a caregiver for a while after surgery in their initial progress. Okay. And to maintain that contact with your physician and your rehabilitation situation,
okay,
you need to follow through on all that.
And quickly, thank you. And quickly, Elizabeth, your message and maybe your web address if people want to support and know more. Very quickly.
Yes, it would be, we would love partners who can join us in sponsoring us to create this awareness.
Okay.
It is just a drop in the ocean so far. And we have a website, www.kenyanheart.or.ke.
Okay.
Where you can get information. And you
thank
can
you.
Also feel free, Lino, to give my
Absolutely.
Email address.
We'll have your information.
Anyone who is listening who would like to be a partner.
We have to leave it there, Elizabeth. Thank you so much. Dr. Farkas, thank you so much for joining us. Anne and Dennis, thank you for joining us. Elizabeth, thank you. And I'm your host, Lenore Mudu in Washington, with producer Jackson Vunganyi. Thank you for joining us. And our engineer, Robert Wagner. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.